This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
The Shmuz is dedicated to Ilui Nishmas Reuven Ben Yaakov, whose yahrzeit was 6th of Av. In addition, this Shmuz is dedicated in the yahrzeit of my father, Nechemya Moshe Ben Rivka, whose yahrzeit is the last day of Tammuz. Okay. When you deal with people on a regular basis, you find some strange things that people do. And on a regular basis, I see people do things that are so inconsistent, so difficult to understand. And over the years, I've learned one line to say, and that is the human being is a mighty strange creation, and I, too, am a human being. It's very important to study this interesting traits of people and interesting mistakes they make, interesting things they get caught up in. But even more important than seeing it in others is being able to apply it to yourself, being able to recognize it in yourself. And this line, the human being is a mighty strange creation, and I too am a human being, I believe is a very, very important line to keep ever in your tongue. With that being said, if you'd like to understand yourself on a fundamental level, if you'd like to understand the incredible conflict called the human being, how is it possible sometimes I'm the nicest guy in the world, catch me in the wrong mood and forget about it. Sometimes I'm generous, magnanimous, giving, and sometimes I'm as stingy as anything. If you study the human being honestly and with real integrity, you'll find that we are very, very contradictory. But I'd like to share with you, it's not by accident, and we're going to focus on something from Chazal today that's going to delve into the essence of man and a better understanding of why Hashem made us this way and what the actual features and parts are. Parsha Vayera opens up. Avraham Avinu lifts up his eyes, and on the horizon, he sees three wayfarers, three wanderers. He runs out to greet them. He bows down full face in the sand. Al na tavro me'al avdecha. Please do not pass your servant. He ushers them in. He quickly runs to Sarah, said, Mahari, quickly, quickly, bake bread. Avram runs to the bakar. Vekach ben bakar rach v'tov. He takes three separate cows. Vayamar lasososo. And then, very interesting, the pasuk says, Vayika chema v'chalov. Avram took butter and milk, uben bakar, and the meat, asha asa, that he made. V'itin lifneim, and he gave it to them to eat. V'omed aleim tachas eitz v'echilu. He stood over them like a waiter while they ate. It's very clear from the pasuk that Avram Avinu fed them milk and meat. Milk, meat, and butter. And I believe, if nothing else, just an interesting observation. The Avos kept all of the Torah. Avraham Avinu kept kashrus. Now, it's very clear why he would give this to those people, because they weren't Jewish and they didn't keep the Torah and it was not relevant. But here's the question. Why would he trafe up his own dishes? Why would he care about that? Like, you know, it's something that's not regularly, he doesn't eat, he doesn't involve in it. Why would he do this? And just a very simple understanding, if nothing else, just a very simple observation. And that is, learning to be other-centered means learning to view another person's reality as real. Being able to understand another person's experience is real, and being able to climb into their shoes and ask myself, what do they want? And it's true that Avraham Avinu went through tremendous problems for this, because he had to kasher the dishes, etc. But this is what they would like, this is what they enjoy. And again, he fed them milk and meat together, which is interesting. It would teach us a little bit of sensitivity in terms of chesed. But this chazal is actually very, very powerful, because this conversation was repeated 400 years later. When Moshe Rabbeinu went up to receive the Torah, the Malachim said, stop, no. They wanted no part of this, and the Malachim wanted to refuse the giving of the Torah. And you have to understand why. When Hashem created the physical world, it was created with an underpinning of spirituality. Everything in the physical world is kept in existence and is directed by spiritual forces, all of it dependent on the spiritual level of creation. The Torah is the greatest energy force in the spiritual world, and the job, the responsibility of maintaining that level was in Shemayim by the Malachim. And in fact, that's what they were involved in, learning Torah, keeping the spiritual level in a position where it would maintain the physical level. You see, the giving of the Torah wasn't just giving man access to learn Torah. It was actually a transference of power. Man was now going to be responsible for the spiritual world, which is the underpinnings of the physical world. And the Malachim said, we want no part of that. No way. Malachim are reliable. Man isn't. Very well and good if man learns, but when he stops, what's going to be? And in fact, Chazal tell us that if for 1 minute there was no Torah learning, the world would cease to exist, because the energy source of all of creation is the spiritual level, which is maintained primarily by learning Torah. Malachim refused. And Hashem said, Moshe Rabbeinu, answer them. Explain to them why it is that you should bring the Torah down to man. Says Moshe Rabbeinu, didn't three of you eat Basav HaChalav in Avram's tent? Miyad Hodu. Immediately, the Malachim agreed. Says Hashem, you answered very well. And the Torah was given to Moshe to bring down to Kal Yisrael. It is an interesting medrash brought by the Balei Tosfos. But I'd like to ask you what I consider a very obvious question on this medrash. And that is, number one, I'm not sure that it's usur for Malach to eat treif. But number two, this was 400 years ago. 400 years ago, three Malachim, let's say they sinned. Let's say there is something wrong with a Malach eating meat. Okay, good, meat and milk, okay. Three Malachim 400 years earlier, but even more than that. It has been now 3,338 years since the receiving of the Torah on Har Sinai. I do believe that more than three men have unfortunately eaten treif food during that time period. If you're telling me that three Malachim eating is a reason not to have them get the Torah and give it to man, it doesn't sound like man did a better job than that. Why was this Miyad Hodu? Immediately, the minute that Moshe Rabbeinu said, you three ate meat and milk, immediately they agreed, the entire group of Malachim agreed, and then Hashem said, you answered well. Why was that such a good answer? And I believe to understand this Chazal, what we need to understand a little better is the most complex creation in the world called the human being. A cat is simple. It has a nature. It follows its nature. A cow is simple. It has instincts. It has desires. A horse is simple. It's predictable. It's dependable. You train it and it obeys. But that's not quite man. Human being is the greatest living human contradiction. And all you have to do is watch people. Sometimes they react in the strangest ways. Sometimes what would seem to be an egregious affront to their honor is nothing. And sometimes the slightest slight, then they get all bent out of shape. Sometimes people are so sweet and nice, and sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're in good moods, and sometimes they're in bad moods. Sometimes they're very sensitive, sometimes they're very insensitive. And I, too, am a human being. But here's the point. I am not Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I'm not some mentally deranged human being. I, like every other human being on the planet, have been made with a nature very, very different than any other creation in the world. And the Chov of the Vovos and Shar Avodas Elokim explains to us why this is. Nishanivra Adam, because man was created midvarm shonim zem mizeh, from opposites, from parts that are completely the antithesis. V'tiva mizgabrim zelzeh. And these two natures, these two parts of man, are constantly in battle. One or the other is constantly vying for primacy. But they're opposite, they're constantly fighting, and the human being is in utter contradiction because nafsho v'gufo, his nefesh and his guf, are completely contradictory, at war one with the other, and vying for primacy. But I want you to understand what the Chov of the Vovos is saying. My physical body doesn't have anything to say. It's the nefesh habahami. If you look in the animal kingdom, you'll find every animal in the wild has a nefesh, has a live, vibrant part to it. The dog, the tiger, the baboon. It has an element to it that it's alive. When it's asleep, it looks like it's not there. It wakes up in the morning and bingo, it is very much alive. As a matter of fact, you could probably even find different natures in different animals. I was a high school Rebbe for 12 years in Rochester. And there was one fellow who, he grew up, and his father gave him a puppy when he was a little boy, and the young fellow and the puppy grew up together. And apparently, when this fellow went off to yeshiva, well, it may have been hard for him, being homesick, it was a lot harder for his dog. And his dog, who grew up together with this fellow, was almost heartbroken. In any case, when this fellow would come home on an out Shabbos, the dog, which hadn't seen his master in 6 weeks, 8 weeks, was so elated, run right up to its master, put itself right next to the leg, and relieve itself over its pants legs in its great excitement. I don't think this fellow was so happy about the dog's response, but here's the point. There's a nature to the dog. There's a vibrant, living essence to it. And dogs are different one from the other. But implanted into Nefesh Abahami, into the Nefesh of the animal, are all of the instincts needed for its survival. The robin hungers for the worm. It doesn't go through the equation based on the availability as well as the nutritional value of the earthworm. I believe I'm going to hunt it. It has an instinct, it has a desire. It has a teva to eat it. So too the bullfrog, so too the robin, so too every one of the animals in creation. There's an interesting article in National Geographic magazine that two biologists had found a few Siberian tiger cubs who were orphaned at birth. Apparently the mother had been killed, and these three cubs were basically left in the wild to die. Without much option, the biologists took the cubs into the lab and began bringing them up on bottled milk. But as the cubs began growing a little bit, the biologists recognized they had a problem. You can't hand feed a Siberian tiger when it gets to a certain age because it ends very badly. So without any other choice, at a certain age, the biologists released these cubs into the wild, realizing they probably won't survive the winter. They tracked these animals almost from the minute they left the biologist's place. They began hunting and tracking the deer. They knew how to wait in the brush. They knew how to jump. They knew exactly how to kill. Because implanted in the animal are all the instincts it needs for its survival, as well as a drive and desire to bring around the next generation. Two bullfrogs don't have a conversation. I think we're going to bring up the children in this way. But there is a desire, a mating need, and all of the instincts for the survival of the individual as well as for the species are born into it. The part that houses that is a nefesh. That nefesh is vibrant, it's alive. It's not quite a human being because there's no anochi, there's no I, and it has a much limited intellect than the human because the brain that it uses is not the same as human being, but it is vibrant, it is alive. If you'd like to see an example of this, in the South Arctic, one of the most incredible examples is the emperor penguin. The emperor penguin lives in about the least inhabitable place on planet Earth, sub-zero degrees temperature, howling winds, and the female will, at a certain point after mating, the female will produce an egg, quite a large egg, and the female will kind of waddle, the egg will be on its feet, it'll waddle over to the male and gently nudge the egg onto the male's feet. Now, here's the point. If the egg touches the ice, it cracks, that egg will not hatch. And gently, it nudges over, gets very close, and somehow they transfer the egg to the male's feet. The male has a brooding patch. It's sort of like almost a kangaroo pouch that covers the egg, and the male stands there. And the female, though, goes off to feed for next 2 months. She has to break through the ice far away. She has to build up her milk supply, and the male will stand there, negative 40 degrees, howling winds, hurricane force, 95 degrees weather. It will stand there day after day for 65 days, effectively eating itself to death because it's not eating. It's not feeding. It will lose 25% of its body weight until finally, after a while, the female comes back. And you could see packs, literally 10,000 penguins. And somehow the female knows exactly who the male she left was, goes right back to him, right back to the spot, and the egg hatches, and the female has the milk supply necessary to feed the offspring. But here's the point. The emperor penguin doesn't say, I'm making this sacrifice for my children. I'll sit here in the howling wind because I want to bring up a buckala. The emperor penguin has been implanted into its nefesh abahami, into its animal soul, the instinct to stand there in the freezing cold despite the damage to itself because Hashem wants to keep it alive as well as every other animal in the wild kingdom. And the interesting part is that if you study the nefesh abahami very carefully, the animal soul, you'll find that we too have a nefesh abahami. Every human being is comprised of two parts. I have a neshama, a pure, holy part that comes from under Hashem's throne of glory. Put into this body that has its own nefesh, its own vibrant life part, and the two parts, my neshama and my nefesh habahami, are at war, at total, complete war, each one vying for primacy, each one wanting control of my brain, each one trying to speak in the voice within me, each one wanting its desires. Part of me, the neshama, the chelek kimimal, comes from Hashem's throne of glory. That part is the part of me that only wants to do what's right, what's good, what's noble, what's proper. It's generous, it's magnanimous, and reaches out, what could I do to alleviate another's pain? But there's another half of me that couldn't care less about anyone other than my needs, my desires. A full half of me is made up of base desires, appetites, hungers, instincts to keep myself alive. And the two voices are ever competing. And if you ever notice, within you, those two voices speak. And all you have to do is pay a little bit of attention to what goes on in your brain, and you'll find yourself amazed. What is going on? What is going on is these two parts are fighting for control over the conscious mind, fighting for control over the brain. And I'll share with you an example of that battle in a very interesting way. When my first daughter was born, this was quite a number of years ago, my wife went on the SIT diet. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with the SIT diet, but the SIT diet is basically you take a wedge of chocolate cake in this hand, take a Diet Coke in this hand, you say the words, I'm so fat, I'm so fat, I'm so fat, consume the entire wedge of chocolate cake, drink the Diet Coke. The SIT diet, self-inflicted torture diet, apparently is very popular. In any case, my wife went on this diet after she had our first child, and I said to her, listen, dear, if you choose to be heavy, I'm okay with that. You choose to be skinny, I'm okay with that. But the self-inflicted torture stuff, it's not getting us nowhere. As they say, if it's going to health in, it wasn't going anywhere, so I said, fine. I had a break during the day. I was still in cola at that point. I said, we're going to Weight Watchers. In the middle of the day, I went to Weight Watchers meeting with my wife. I would take her, and I found something very, very interesting. First of all, I was the only male in the group there, interestingly enough. But this is what I got to see. The leader gets up, and she says, okay, ladies, what happened this week? One woman says, well, I was doing really great, and then somebody at work broke chocolate cake. Oh, chocolate cake, I hear the moans. Another one says, well, for me, it was the potato chips. Oh, potato chips, chocolate, potato chips. These ladies were losing it right in front of my eyes. And I said to myself, that's very interesting. I, as a Ben Torah, as a yeshiva man, recognize that battle all the time. But here were people dealing with that battle in a real way. But here's the observation. Weight Watchers gives you a nutritious diet. Plenty of calories, plenty of snacks. You're not going hungry. Why can't you just stick to the diet? Why do you lose it when someone mentions chocolate cake, when someone mentions potato chips? And I'd like to share with you why that is. I made a firm decision. For the next 2 months, I will not touch chocolate cake. I've made that decision. I'm firm in it. And then someone brings a wedge of chocolate cake in front of me. Nope, not touching it. Not going to touch it. No. And within me is a raging war. And when I consume that chocolate cake, all it means is that one voice won over. But that contradiction, that living contradiction, is you and I all day, every day, on so many issues, constantly battling, constantly fighting for control, and one or the other takes control. The more you give in to one, the stronger it becomes. The more you give in to the other, the stronger it becomes. Much like a muscle, with use it gets stronger, with disuse it atrophies. The more you give in to Nefesh HaBahami, the stronger and stronger it becomes, the more dominant it becomes, the more demanding it becomes, the more controlling it becomes. The more you hold it back and use the Nefesh HaSichli, the Neshama, the stronger it becomes, and the weaker the Nefesh HaBahami becomes. But those two voices are ever speaking, ever within me. And here's the question. Why in the world do that? Why did Hashem put this in man? I don't get it. We were created to grow, given the opportunity to change myself, to grow, to accomplish, to be who I'm supposed to be for eternity. What good does it do man to have this constant fight? Give me the Torah, the spiritual guidebook for perfection. Give me this opportunity called life, and let me go. What do I need this distraction, this noise, this constant battle? I do, I don't, I want, I want. What do we need this for? And the answer to this is fundamental to understanding this essence, this element called Bechira. I asked this in a recent shmooze, but it bears repeating. Ask your six-year-old child, goes to Cheder, does a malach have Bechira? Does an angel have free will? No, absolutely not. Everyone knows man has free will, angels don't have free will. Of course, it's not true. Malachim have free will just like man has free will. The difference between man and malachim is not free will. The difference is clarity of vision. A malach sees with absolute clarity of vision every mitzvah that Hashem commanded us and helps me, improves myself, changes the world, is something that for eternity I'll be ever proud of. Every avera damages me, sullies me, damages the world. But a malach sees that with absolute clarity of sight. I do not drink bleach. I do not put my hands in fire. I don't eat laundry pods. The difference between the malach and the man is the malach isn't tempted to do something that's so self-destructive. But here's the problem. How do you give man free will? The growth of the human being is by making a choice. Hashem put us in a position where we're supposed to choose, and that choice is what shapes me. That choice is what I get reward for, but it has to be an even playing field. How do you give a brilliant neshama, born under Hashem's kisei hakavod, that sees the future, that sees everything in absolute clarity, how do you give a free will? A free will to drink bleach? Free will to destroy myself? It doesn't make sense. To answer this thorny dilemma, Hashem put the neshama into a body with a nefesh bahami. That animal soul within me has its voice, has its desires, has its needs, and now all of a sudden I, in the middle of this conflict, don't, want me, let's go, no, don't. I'm a living contradiction. Why? Because it's the making the right choices for which I'm credited. Who I am for eternity is not based on where Hashem put me, not based on my talents, my abilities, based on one thing, which choices did I make? Because every choice that I make shapes me, molds me for eternity. But it's the even playing field. It's the complete balance. That's when I'm given credit for what I do, because that's a real challenge. A malach doesn't grow. A malach is stagnant, because a malach isn't tempted. But the human being is tempted. How am I tempted? Because there are sometimes when I feel the kedusha of Shabbos, it's incredible. Wow, lecha dodi, and you sing the word, and it's amazing. And 10 minutes later, I'm gone. I could be dominating Shemar Esrei, speaking to Hashem right here, literally speaking to my Creator, and then a thought comes into my brain, and I'm 3,000 miles away. Sometimes I want to learn, I want to grow, and sometimes I couldn't care less. Sometimes I hear about a person who's in trouble, and I say, oh my goodness, what could I do? How could I help? And sometimes I just don't care. And the I who am speaking to you, being made up of these two voices, am totally in conflict, and whichever one I exercise more becomes stronger, becomes me. Who I am for eternity is based on which choices I make. And when you understand the nature of man, you also can understand many of the mitzvahs. Treif food is metamtem the lev, deadens the heart. What does that mean? You're not going to feel kedusha the same way if you eat treif food. It just deadens, like Novocaine. You know, you go to the dentist, you get Novocaine, you could drool, you won't even feel it. Treif food deadens the heart. The Chovos Levavos explains that many, many of the mitzvahs, if not most of the mitzvahs, are specifically because we're made of these two parts. I have a nefesh bahami, and there are certain activities, certain things that strengthen the nefesh bahami, certain things that strengthen the nefesh sichli. Hashem says, do these things, don't do those things. Meat from a cow, shechted, kosher, eat it, isn't eat. Milk from a cow, drink it, wonderful. Cook them together, boom, basav chalav. Wool, great for garment. Linen, great for garment. Wool and cotton, fine. Linen and cotton, fine. Wool and linen, boom, shatnez. Why? The Chovos Levavos explains, because this gives an inordinate strengthening to the nefesh bahami. And they're called chukim because we don't understand how they function. You have to be a scientist of the spiritual world to understand how, but they strengthen the nefesh bahami. They give an inordinate strengthening and power to nefesh bahami. Hashem warns us against those things that damage us and tells us do the things that help us. We don't eat predators. Not a single kosher animal is a predator. Why? Because the nefesh within that predator, when you consume the meat, you're consuming a part of that nefesh, And Hashem doesn't want us to be aggressive predators. The foods affect the person. Yeah, even modern man understands, drink too much caffeine and you're going to be edgy. But this is far more spiritual and far more powerful and much more effective. Here's an observation. Some point during a fast day, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I want you to pay careful attention to your thoughts. And I almost guarantee that you're going to think very differently then than you think during the rest of the week. As a matter of fact, I'd like to ask you the question. The holiest day of the year is Yom Kippur. Obviously, the Torah would want to see a big breakfast Yom Kippur morning. You got a long day of davening and shul. Let's go. Get your strength, get your energy, and let's go. Yet there is no kiddush that we make on Yom Kippur day. We don't eat a breakfast. Why? Why do we have a fast? So again, the Chovos Levavos explains to us, because you see, what we're doing by that is weakening the Nefesh HaBahami. If you feed the animal soul, it becomes stronger and stronger. If you don't feed it, if you starve it, it becomes weaker. And as the fast begins wearing on, at some point, there's a clarity of vision. There's a clarity of understanding that you will not have without that fast. Because when the body becomes weaker, and especially on a day like Yom Kippur, there's an extra Kedusha of the day, you're able to understand things, you're able to think about things, you're able to look back and look forward, and you'll have a clarity of understanding that you wouldn't have otherwise. And I believe that's exactly the answer to the Malachim. Do you know why Moshe Rabbeinu said, here's the answer, you ate meat and milk? You see, why did the Malachim eat meat and milk? The answer is, Malach would never do anything wrong. The answer is very simple. It doesn't damage a Malach. A Malach doesn't have a Nefesh HaBahami that becomes stronger by eating tray food. What Moshe Rabbeinu said was, look, Malachim are perfect. They don't do things wrong. Why did you eat it? Because it doesn't damage you. The Torah is given to man. Man who's made of these two contradictory parts. Man who could be holier than the highest Malach or lower than the lowest whatever. But the human being, because he's specifically in conflict, because there are two voices within him, the Torah was written for him, not for Malachim, for the human being, because they strengthen the Nefesh HaBahami or strengthen the Neshama. Most of the mitzvahs do that. And when the Malachim heard that, Miyad Hodu, Hashem said, you answered very, very well. And when you understand this Chazal, and you understand the conflicting nature of the human being, you understand much of life differently, and certainly much of the Torah differently. Rav Aaron Kotler used to laugh. People look at Torah like a mitzvah. Like another mitzvah, this mitzvah, that, lulav, sukkah, and also Torah, as if they're equal. Why did Rav Aaron used to laugh? Because one word of Limud HaTorah is more potent, more powerful than all the mitzvahs put together. Why is that? Because it's the Das Elyon, the thoughts of Hashem. Hashem created the single most potent force in creation in the spiritual world called Torah. And when a person ingests that, when a person imbibes it, when a person thinks heavily in Torah, it creates a Kedusha. It changes him, changes the upper world. It doesn't change the physical world. You won't see it. But he starts glowing. The world begins changing. And it's different than any other mitzvah. Most of what we do all day, every day, is feed the Nefesh HaBahami. We eat, we sleep, we drink, we earn a living. Most of our activities, we have to be involved with the Nefesh HaBahami because that's the way Hashem created the world in a way that will have a real challenge. There's very, very little that strengthens the Neshama. What strengthens the Neshama? Davening, tzedakah, chesed, and more than anything, Limud HaTorah, learning. What does it do? It strengthens the soul. All you have to do is engage in it and you find it. A very simple experiment. If you want to work on any inyan, just learn the halachas. Rousseau Salanti used to say, all you have to do if you want to work on something, just learn the halachas of that inyan and suddenly it changes. Suddenly you're much more careful about other people's money. Learn halachas lashon hara, you're much more careful. It's not just that you're aware, it's that your neshama has become enlightened. Your neshama has become more potent. Your neshama is shining to a much greater extent. And you've changed the balance within you. And when you understand the human being, you understand us, how we could be so contradictory, how one minute I could be so kind and nice, next minute I could be as nasty as anything. You understand the mitzvahs in the Torah, and you understand a tremendous amount of why Hashem created us and what life is about. But there's one more step that I think is very important to understand. when my son Shlomo Aryeh was maybe 10 or 12 years old, he was reading a series called books called Animorphs. Animorphs are these people that change into animals, etc. And in this storyline, there's a yerk. What's a yerk? A yerk is a little slug that climbs into your ear and takes over your brain. So if you want to go left, but the slug says, I'm going right, you go right. You want to go forward, the slug says, we're going back, we go back. When the yerk climbs into your ear and takes over your brain, you may want to do whatever, but it now controls you, and you have to obey it. It's taken over you, and you're a slave. Says my son when he was about 12 years old, Abba, isn't that a great mushel to the Yetzirah? And the Yetzirah gets inside you and takes over, right? So, of course, because he's a little kid, I said, yes, very good mushel. I'd like to share with you, it's a terrible mushel. A terrible mushel. You see, when the yerk gets inside your brain, you say, I want to go left, but it says we're going right. When the Yetzirah takes over you, I want to do it. You see, I'm the conscious brain. I'm the one who's thinking these thoughts. My brain is right there, both the Neshama and Nefesh HaBahami vie for that screen. But if the Nefesh HaBahami takes over, I'm reading those words. I want to do X. I want to get even. I want to take revenge. I don't want to. Yes, you do. I don't. It's not that the yerk takes over. I suddenly want it. And I change. And this is why I become so much of a different person based on my thoughts, based on my actions, because I become consumed with that. If you've ever been angry and you become like a different person, you're like enraged, and you just think about what you said the next day and you can't believe you said it, you got hijacked. Anger took over, spoke in your brain, but you had to listen to it. And it was you at that moment who was saying, yes, I want to get back at that guy. I'm furious with him. But I'm acting that out, imprinting into me at that moment are all the thoughts, all the things that I don't want to be doing or am doing. But every single action, every single conversation, every single thought changes me for eternity. The stakes are mighty high, and a person can be amazingly great or the opposite. There's a story that illustrates this. In the time of the Chofetz Chaim, there's a dibuk. Dibuk is a neshama that's not allowed into Shemayim for whatever reason, and it's at certain points allowed to enter a living human being, a living body, and take over. In any case, there was a young girl who dibuk clearly entered her, because the young girl began speaking in ways that she could not have ever spoken, new things she could not have known, and became known that the dibuk was there. They called the Chofetz Chaim, and the Chofetz Chaim came to excise the dibuk. But when the Chofetz Chaim walked in, the nivel peh, the disgusting language that the dibuk was speaking with, lewd comments, disgusting remarks, Chofetz Chaim said, why do you speak that way? Why are you speaking that way? And the dibuk said, don't you understand? I became a Baal Taiva. That's who I am. And for eternity, if you think the wrong thoughts and let it become you, that is you. But here's the point. You ever see an old man? He no longer can function in that realm, but he's lusting after women. You can become a Baal Taiva that you can't fulfill your taiva in any way because you've imprinted it into the essence of you. You can become an angry person. You see, when it's curtain call, the lights come down and I separate, I am for eternity what I shape myself into. But that's me. If I worked on myself and became generous, magnanimous, giving, other-centered, that's me. If I was selfish and completely absorbed in myself, that's me. But I became it, it became me, and there's no changing. And you wake up in the world to come with desires that make no sense. I have no body. What are you hacking a chinek? I'm going to eat. I get a steak. I can't wait to eat a steak. Wow. What do you got? Eat a steak. Because if you allow that to become you, it defines you, becomes you, and becomes the essence of you, even when you no longer have physicality, and even when you have no way to meet it. And I think this chazal is very eye-opening because it allows us to understand exactly what we're faced with, exactly what the opportunity of being a human being is, and allows us to recognize the mitzvahs of Torah. The Malachim immediately agreed. Why did they agree? Because 400 years ago, three of you ate basar v'chalav, yes. How could a malach do it? A malach has bechira. It would never do something damaging, never do something wrong. It's not wrong for a malach because the mitzvahs are given to man. Trey food is metamtim the lev of Adam. It strengthens the nefesh of Bahami. It doesn't damage a malach. But that formula, the mitzvahs, shatnas, treif, all in the mitzvahs of the Torah are specific for man. Man who's given these two natures. Part of me is a nefesh of Bahami. Much like the robin hungers for the world, and worm, much like the bullfrog hungers to mate, their desires within every animal in the animal kingdom, so too within me. All of the instincts necessary for survival are put in within me. And the question is, who takes control? Do I use this as a horse to pull me? Do I marshal control of the body and I use it as a tool to grow, to accomplish? Or does it control me? But at the end of the day, one or the other takes control, and one or the other vies for primacy, and one or the other becomes who I am forever. And the more you do whatever it may be, the stronger it becomes. But the point is, I'm constantly changing, constantly growing or shrinking. All the mitzvahs are there to protect me. And the ultimate protection for the human being is Limud HaTorah, because it's the strongest force in the spiritual world. And that is who we are. And you understand this, you understand the human being. And I'd like to close with an observation. A number of years ago, when word processors first came out, they were very clunky and very primitive. This was sort of the modern typewriter. Instead of actually keys that would hit against paper, you would type in and you'd see on the screen what you're going to type out, and you'd hook this up to a printer, and from your word processor, it would print out whatever you wanted to print. But here was the problem. The screens were very primitive. The technology was very primitive. How do you create a bold word? How do you underline a word? So in those days, what you would do is, if you wanted a bolder word, you'd put an open bracket B and a closed bracket. That's what you'd see on the screen, and that would be a signal to the printer to bold that word. If you wanted to underline a word, open bracket U, closed bracket, again, that's what you'd see on the screen, but that would be a signal to the printer to underline that word. Late 80s, technology evolved, and along came something called WYSIWYG. WYSIWYG is an acronym for what you see is what you get. Now, in Word, you click B, and the word on the screen is bolded. You click U, and the word on the screen is underlined. What you see on the screen is what you get in the printer. I believe that is a very apt parable for life. We're very busy here, doing, thinking, involved, busy, 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 distracted. When a curtain comes down, I leave this earth and WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get exactly as I am now. Exactly at this moment. This is the last moment of time. This is who I am. And when you understand this, you say to yourself, oh my goodness, there's a thing called tshuva. There's a thing called Yom Kippur. I can't wait. Let's go. I could change. I could get rid of entire days, weeks. I can undo tremendous amount of things. But one thing for sure, I will not remain where I am. Because ladies and gentlemen, I don't know about you, but if I were to leave this earth right now, I don't know, many things I'd be happy that I did, many things I'd be proud of, but many things that I would not be pleased with at all. And when you understand that, you understand what we were given the mission of self-perfection, to become a great human being, not great by any other scale other than me, measured by the potential of I, measured by the single criteria of how much of my potential did I accomplish. All the mitzvahs helped me. Torah certainly is more than anything, but at the end of the day, I am for eternity what I shall shape myself into. That's the purpose in life. That's the reason why Hashem put us here, and that is a great opportunity called life.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.